When it comes to making plans, you are the best. What about those round trips, which are perfect on your way there and perfect on your way back? Or those meetings with friends, surprise parties, camps, birthdays. The same way you plan for the important moments, start planning to protect you and your loved ones from a natural disaster. Sign up for local weather and emergency alerts. Prepare an emergency kit and make a family communications plan. Get started at ready.gov/plan.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
The Mets putting the stamp on what has been a great season, one of the great seasons in franchise history, coming out of nowhere to make the playoffs, especially being buried 11 games under 500 in May. It is a shock, but also now we start to look ahead. Hey, tonight is game one, Mets and Brewers. There is a playoff game, 5:30 as a matter of fact, so we're now hours away from first pitch. Hard to believe after what happened yesterday, the emotions of it. It was exhausting, not only for the players themselves, but obviously for us as fans as well. But the Mets now find themselves in a postseason series, and now it's going to be about the Milwaukee Brewers.
You think you guys could get to the World Series?
I mean, could? Yes. I don't like this matchup. I prefer the Padres. I think the Brewers...
Even with the travel?
Milwaukee creates chaos. Yeah, I wouldn't worry about the travel so much. Like, San Diego's talented, but I just feel like, all right, well, maybe that talent could have an off night or two and you can catch him and also pay them back for what happened a couple years ago. The Brewers are a team. You watch them play. When teams like that create havoc on the base paths, that is tough. Like, I think the Brewers could be a real threat to go through the playoffs in the National League.
Well, there's not many teams like that, so it's hard to guard against that because not many teams are built that way. They're going to be tricky out here. Yeah, I mean, listen, I still think Met fans, you have a couple of hours before you got to dig in and get serious. I get it. There's a time to turn the page, and we're getting there slowly. But yesterday was awesome. I mean, it was just, you know, hearing all the different calls, and I had Howie on the way home. So I got the start of the rally in the car. Then I get home, and then I put on SNY, and I get, you know, Gary going bonkers. It was just absolutely wild. And it really does remind you that as much as football's king, there's no theater like baseball. It's the stops and the starts. It was incredible. Like sometimes, like you almost feel like you want to say more about it, but I can't give that game any more platitudes. I can't. Otherwise, it's going to like sound phony. Watching that in real time, it was absolutely insanity. It was insane, and it was awesome. And yeah, you know, how far do you get along in the race? That's what we'll dissect the next couple of days or maybe weeks or a month or so. But for right now, suspend the reality of the degree of difficulty of the chore. The Mets were, they deserved this. They earned every ounce of it.
Yeah, and just the improbability of a team that, look, coming into the year, it was going to be a little bit of a reset year. I forget what the exact term that they used. Remember, there was a term that everybody around the Mets was using. It wasn't rebuild. Maybe it was reset. But either way, they lowered the expectations, wanted to under-promise and over-deliver, and they did just that. And many people, it wasn't like everybody was saying they can never make the playoffs. As a matter of fact, I remember myself saying, especially after J.D. Martinez, like, yeah, if everything goes right, they should be contending for a final wild card spot. However, when you see them then start 0-5 and you see the worst of the possibilities, and then they're 11 games under 500, I don't think anybody in their right mind, including people with the Mets, really truly believed that they were going to dig out to the extent that they did. And they did. Here we are. It took a lot. They've been in the best team in baseball record-wise since June, and they barely got in, but they are in the postseason, and this is what it's about. The win yesterday, that game, that's why we're sports fans. Tonight, getting a chance to go sit down and watch your team in the postseason, in a postseason series. Yankees have that on Saturday, and we'll get into that. Can't wait to do that. That's what it's about. You cannot buy this stuff. This is not you. Steve Cohen, he got all his money. It didn't work. He tried to buy it last year. It didn't work out. You can't buy postseason games. Even if you try, you can't do it. Yeah. And as fans, we certainly have no control over buying anything. So you sit back and watch. And for only the 11th time in franchise history, we're going to get to watch the New York Mets in the postseason.
Think about all the calls you've made to the station. Think about all the tweets you fired off. Think about all the text messages you fired off to your friends and your everybody that's in your Mets group here, and I don't mean this year. I mean all through the years, really since 1987, specifically when WFAN launched, and it doesn't happen all the time. And every time you call, you call with an agenda to express a point that in your mind will ultimately get the Mets where you want them to get. And for only the 11th time, they're here. Enjoy it.
Yeah.
I hope it's a long ride, and I hope we meet again.
Me too.
Because I know we'll be ready again. Don't you worry about that.
You're coming up in a little bit. You're going to get to that Soto point.
Yes, I do.
BT and Sal, we got into it with the Pete Rose stuff. I'm still fired up from that. In case you missed it and you're just joining us, BT and I were disagreeing about Pete Rose. You go check it out on the free Odyssey app. Our friends at Town Fair Tire remind you that at Town Fair Tire, you always get the guaranteed lowest price on name brand tires from Connecticut to Maine. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. John is in Wappingers Falls. What's up, Johnny?
Good afternoon, fellas. Lifelong Mets fan here. It's a great day to be that.
Yeah,
sure. Without the Mets, I would literally not be here. Hear me out. My parents' first date was a Mets-Dodgers doubleheader back in 79. They stayed for both games, so my mom knew she was getting into, and I was lucky enough to buy the two seats they sat in when they tore down Shea. But yesterday's game was about the absolute epitome of being a Mets fan. Excitement going into it, followed by disappointment, followed by utter pandemonium and excitement. Then by the oh-so-familiar gut-crushing disappointment. But that's usually where it ends. You know, there's always next year, we usually say. But then the real MVP, I feel, throughout the entire team, the entire city on his back, like he did all season long. And it's been one of the best seasons, I think, to watch as a fan. Whatever happens between now and Thursday, in my opinion, is just a cherry on top. Some may say I'm just
setting this up. Hold on a sec, Joe. Now, do you really mean that? I know that you said that,
yeah.
But do you really mean that?
Yes. Worst thing my dad ever did was make me a Mets and Jets fan. So I know I'm used to disappointment. You know, we were never 5-6 months ago. We were never supposed to be here. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm a realist. You know, we were looking back in May and you know, putting my kids and myself through that torture of watching those games. You know, it's you know, I honestly think this season is a success. No matter what happens between now, do I want it to win? Of course. Yeah, I would give my right arm right now.
Okay.
But you know, but just seeing where they were and where they are, and it's, you know, with all the money that they had to, you know, let go with Scherzer and everybody else, it's been a season for the fans, I should say.
I tend to agree with him that the way that it has played out and they got in, even if they get swept, let's just say, worst case scenario in Milwaukee. I'd be okay with it.
Let's recalibrate the expectations. Here we go.
Well, the expectation was none.
Well,
I mean,
here we go.
At 11
they're
games
coming
under.
Now. All right, a little context. If this happens, here we go.
It's not even excuses. It's just how I feel.
Should have expected this at some point today.
Yeah.
The Met fans started to prep themselves for little doom. Took 2 hours and 12 minutes, but here we go.
With me, it's not prepping for doom. It's that there's no emotion as far as the Brewers go. If this were the Braves, it'd be a different story. So there's no emotion from that standpoint. And I just feel like, all right, well, even if they lose, the Brewers have been the better team all year long. Yeah, I didn't expect the Mets, especially when they were 11 games under, to get to this point. And would I be disappointed? Sure, but I don't think that I would rip them for an 89-win season, even if it resulted in a first-round sweep.
Nobody should rip them. They are beyond being ripped at this point. But at what point does what we thought they were expire versus who they've become? Because that's starting to sound a little old to me.
Right, but even with
we all know they were 0-5 and 22-33, and this guy was hurt, and that guy stunk. We know.
Look at the
roster. They've also had, as you've told me a million times all summer, they've had the best record since May. Yeah. So which one are we going to hang on here? You can't do both.
Look at the roster and tell me that you think confidently that this roster is better than Milwaukee. Like, for me, it's all about expectation versus results. So, yeah, you're right. The expectations changed in season where I expected them to become a playoff team. They did that. I do not expect them to beat the... Anything could happen in the baseball playoffs, which makes it great, but I can't sit here and say that I expect the Mets to win and to be disappointing if they lose, whereas the Yankees are a completely different story, especially in the first couple of rounds. Like, the expectation should be they should win those series, and it would be terribly disappointing if they don't. I'm not there with the Mets myself.
Okay, I mean, listen, you feel how you feel. I get it. I understand it because the roster is, you know, is average in too many spots. So I don't see some long run coming. It would be amazing if there is, and, you know, we get another Subway Series if the Yankees hold up their end. Of course, we all want that, but I think it's a little unrealistic to expect that from the Mets right now, the way they start this postseason journey. It's interesting, though. And I said it again to start today's show, the most gratifying seasons for me are the unexpected ones.
Yeah.
Like, and I reference like the first year with Parcells coming off the 1-15 year with Kotite. When Parcells came in here, the Jets went 9-7 in 1997, a long time ago, obviously, but following the 1-15 1996 season with Kotite, They come in, and the first game that year, they win, I think it was 44-3 in Seattle, week one with Parcells. And I don't know what to expect. I just remember I was in Atlantic City that weekend with my buddies. That was the weekend Princess Diana got killed. I remember coming back at like 5 in the morning. We're all driving back. We heard it on the radio. You know, we take a nap. We watched the Jet game. We were like, wow. And we're like, we were gifted this amazingly unexpected season. It was a lot of fun, even though it fell far short of what we wanted. But while that's cute in real time, it almost equates to more pain at the back end because you become almost more invested in it because it's unexpected and it could actually hurt more than if you actually think you're a championship team coming into the season.
Well, anytime you go out early outside of winning a championship, it's going to hurt. So I'm not saying it's not going to hurt, but I just don't think that. I think the Mets have exceeded expectations, similar to the Knicks when they beat Cleveland a couple years ago. Once they won that first round finally and beat Cleveland, to me, even though it was disappointing that they lost to Miami, a team that I still think they should have beaten and maybe would have if they were healthy, I couldn't go nuts with that series. Disappointing, yes, but they, to me, reached or exceeded their expectation. That's where I'm at with this Mets team. In 2017, the Yankees had the lowest expectations going into a season as I could remember, and yet they delivered. And I would ask you, like, has there been a better season since 2017 for the Yankees?
No, no. I think the one variable here, though, and, you know, it. I mean, I'm not really expecting it necessarily, but what if Pete Alonso becomes a superstar for a month?
Well, then it could happen.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
See, I think the possibility for the Mets to go far is there. I just don't expect it.
I got you.
I don't know. It's a weird. And look, maybe I'll feel differently after I watch the game tonight and be frustrated. Ah, this Diaz blew another one or whatever. Or how could Mendy do that? By the way, I don't think Mendy had a good game yesterday. X's and O's.
What jumped out the most?
He should have left Maton in there for at least one more batter. Mm-hmm. I thought he was too itchy to get to Diaz yet again, thinking like Boone or all these other managers that once they go to the closer, the game is over. That's not how it works. And you're asking a lot from Edwin Diaz coming off of what he did on Sunday. And then again, now five out save. There was no, like, Maton is fine. Let him pitch to Gio Urshela. If it were Matt Olson or Ozuna, different story. It's Gio Urshela. Mm-hmm. Like, if Phil Maton can't get him out, then he shouldn't be on the, like, you need somebody to be able to get other outs than Diaz. That's not the heart of the order. For goodness sake, let Maton just pitch that Urshela. So he was itchy, couldn't wait to get to Diaz, and he did, and then he imploded. Anyway, I don't know what the hell the point of that was, but point is that, maybe they blow it tonight, and then I start to go nuts tomorrow. I don't know how the games will play out, but I just tell you my feel right now. The expectation is that I would not be surprised at all if Milwaukee wins this series. Ray is in Waterbury, Connecticut. What's up, Ray?
Hi, guys. Great job as usual. One thing I think we finally shed, you discussed it, BT discussed it last year, and I even thought that. I think they shed the softness after that win yesterday. They're no longer soft anymore, Sal.
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough win. You're right. I can't call that core led by Lindor soft any longer. They proved themselves to get the job done against the Braves in a game where they were down in the eighth inning and again in the ninth. Down twice in that game, eighth and ninth inning. So, yes, to the fact that they showed that toughness, I agree with you. I can no longer call this core, especially Lindor, soft.
As for a great game, I'm 75 years old, guys. I've been following Mets from the beginning. I've never seen an emotional game flip like it did within one inning like that, from the highest highs, the lowest lows, to where you can't believe you won it. You know what I mean? So it was a great, great game.
No, I mean, the shift in, and congrats, in 75, this guy's been digging in for a long time, so hopefully the Mets keep going for you here. The shift in energy in that stadium was just, I mean, it was stark. You almost wish it was at Citi Field that was going down.
Oh, but my God.
It's almost more pleasurable that it was down there. Yeah. Oh, it's got to be.
Well, the emotion, and there were some Mets fans there, of course, but the
Mets fans have been traveling. Even in Milwaukee, they were there.
The place would have been insane. And I really wish the series, I hate that, I mean, I get it that it's during the week, but I do wish this were on the weekend. I would be going if it were this weekend. But it would have been insane if a game like that took place at Citi Field. Yeah. Can you imagine 40,000 plus going absolutely bonkers?
Yeah.
It was fun as it is, but, it was nice to see them do it on the road in that place specifically. But if the home crowd were behind that type of game, I mean, Lindor. I mean, yeah, the fans would have stormed the field potentially and got to Francisco Lindor.
It's an all-time moment right there. It is. That's an iconic snapshot. And the symbolism was not lost on me because it's like the wounded, you know, the wounded leader, the wounded warrior just slowly making his way back to the dugout and his boys waiting for him, taking off the helmet, the embrace, like, hey, you know, you... I don't know how you're doing this. Like, they didn't say this, but they're kind of looking at him like, I don't know how you just did this, but we kind of expected you to do this, even though we know that you are jacked up.
We also have the Yankees postseason coming up this weekend, and we will have tickets to give away right here on this show for Games 1 and Games 2. Looking forward to that.
Yes, that is going to be a lot of fun, and we'll give you guys details as we get a little closer. But us and Boomer and Geo, and of course Evan and Tiki, give you a chance to get into the Bronx. So you know, you never know where this ride's going to take us. It could take us to the ultimate destination, and that's the hope. But the Yankees begin Saturday with the journey in the Bronx. The Mets begin tonight, and it is go time.
Keith is in Newark, New Jersey. What's up, Keith?
What's up, guys? How you doing?
Good. How are you, Keith?
Hey, man.
All right, my man. First time caller.
Okay.
What's going on? Great, great. I was going nuts with the TV yesterday. It was a great, great win. The win's gone. Let's be like Mendy. What do we do now? Who's going to be our Daniel Murphy, guys?
No, I mean, Daniel Murphy, and thank you for the call, Keith. Appreciate you checking in. Yeah, you get a Daniel Murphy, then maybe the Mets can go to the World Series.
I'll give you my candidate for him. Gantos.
Yeah. I mean, there's two guys that I trust wholeheartedly in this lineup, Lindor and Vientos.
Mm-hmm.
But those are the obvious. Like, would those two be enough? You know, the way the Mets have done it, it's somebody different every night. Iglesias has been great. Even with him yesterday, there was a spot where, before he got the base hit, I wanted him to bunt. It was first and second. I'm saying just bunt, second and third, sack fly for Vientos, tie the game up.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, he rips one down the line.
That was some swing. That was a good pitch. That was a very good pitch.
Lindor.
That he hit down the line.
Yeah,
so,
no,
that
I
was
know.
A good pitch.
I mean, is there a... Pete has the potential to be what Daniel Murphy did. Alvarez as well. I mean, they got a bunch of guys with the potential. I'm not buying it. I think Lindor, Vientos, they guys come up with some timely hitting. I don't think there's going to be a player that did what Murphy did in the 2015 postseason.
He might not see that ever again for the Mets.
Yeah.
Honestly, I mean, that's how amazing it was, what Murphy was doing.
Steve is calling from Bayside, Queens. Steve?
What's going on, guys? I really agree with Brandon about Pete Rose. Pete Rose, for me, he was kind of a Johnny One Note. I mean, he did draw his walks. He wasn't just a singles hitter, but he was kind of almost a one-dimensional player. And I know that people loved his attitude and how hard he played, but I've been hearing people say that his record will never be broken. Well, actually, it has been broken. Ichiro Suzuki between Japan and
here. It's not Major League Baseball. Now, it's not major, so it doesn't count.
No, but hold on. I knew you were going to say that.
Well,
it's not
what I'm going to say.
Look at his numbers when he moved over here. He didn't miss a beat when he moved to Major League Baseball. He was basically the same player that he was in Japan.
Okay.
So I don't want to hear that.
Well, what do you mean you don't want to hear it?
And also,
Here's what I don't want to hear. I don't care what happened in the Japan Baseball League that he was in. We care about Major League Baseball here. Nobody said what Pete Rose did in Japan. We're talking about what he did in Major League Baseball, which is what we talk about here, Major League Baseball.
When it comes to making plans, you are the best. What about those round trips, which are perfect on your way there and perfect on your way back? Or those meetings with friends, surprise parties, camps, birthdays? The same way you plan for the important moments, start planning to protect you and your loved ones from a natural disaster. Sign up for local weather and emergency alerts. Prepare an emergency kit and make a family communications plan. Get started at ready.gov/plan.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
That's fine, but
well, what do you mean,
no one can tell me that he would not have produced.
He didn't.
Similar results.
Yeah, but he didn't. He didn't. I'm confused as to what you're saying. You're looking at hypothetical.
The way to answer that, and thanks for the call there, Steve. Now, again, the Japanese numbers are one thing. Ichiro came over at the age of 27. So there's a mathematical way to attack this. Not now. If you wanted to, you should have had it prepared. You know, if you would have come up at a conventional age, 21, 22, and you were able to, you know, prorate a couple of the seasons based on what he did at age 27 on, then you could come up with a more solid, concrete number. All right, that might be interesting. And by the way, I don't think that Steve is wrong, but what he did in Japan means nothing here. What I would say is, if I'm starting a team tomorrow, I would take Ichiro over Pete Rose. That's how I would have addressed Sal's point.
And look, if Ichiro played his entire big league career here, he probably would have been the all-time hit leader, hit king, whatever you want to say.
He also just beat you more ways, though. And he had one of the best arms from right field in the history of baseball. I mean, he's right there with Clemente, Dave Winfield, Jesse Barfield, Dave Parker, Larry Walker. I mean, he was absolutely... Ichiro Suzuki stealing 50 bases, hitting 330, 340, 350. Pete Rose didn't do that.
What was Ichiro's career batting average, you know?
I don't have that in front of me.
I have it up. You want to take a guess?
Let me see. Hold on a second. So he came up at the age of 27. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. And he played until he was 41?
45.
No, 45? Yeah. Jeez. All right, so obviously it's going to diminish at the end there. If I had to say 325?
311.
Is that, yeah, okay.
I'm just saying, like, we're going to minimize and diminish Pete Rose in 303 through, you know, his 25 years or whatever.
Yeah, but
it was.
He's still 10 points higher.
No, 8. 311 to Pete's 303, I believe.
Yeah, but I think you're marginalizing, like, 10 points is, it's not, like, 10 points over... Over 20 years is a lot of hits.
You're making it sound like Ichiro was a billion times better than Pete Rose.
Who's the better player, Ichiro or Pete Rose?
Pete Rose has the all-time leading hit. Player.
So you're married to the numbers. Like you're not a prisoner to the hardcore numbers, which is fine.
I'm not a numbers guy.
To me, there's context
I think
there.
At least that's the comp, Ichiro versus Pete Rose, because they did similar things. But if you're dismissing Pete Rose, one-dimensional singles hitter, well, I mean, Ichiro wasn't a powerful hitter.
I understand
How many times did Ichiro hit double-digit home runs?
No, but that's why I incorporate the defense and the stolen bases.
Okay.
I'm making it more than one-dimensional. Like, Ichiro was just better.
Yeah.
He beat you more ways. I mean... I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, I mean, Ichiro is a better fielder if you go based off the Gold Gloves, and he can run a little bit. All right,
a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, how many steals did he have?
He had a lot of stolen bases.
How many did Pete have?
Pete Rose didn't have many stolen
bases.
Exactly.
I mean, it's a big difference.
I mean, I just don't understand what we're talking about here.
I know you don't.
One guy in the entire history.
Yeah.
One person in Major League Baseball history.
Okay.
Whether a caller calls about it, whatever you say about it, Hoff, me.
Mm-hmm.
There is no debating that there is one guy in the entire history of Major League Baseball that has the most hits. That guy is Pete Rose. And we're talking about him being overrated?
No, there is no debating that.
Ichiro would have. He didn't. Would have. What's the old saying? If my aunt had, yeah, you get it. Well, she isn't. She's my aunt. Pete Rose is. He is the hit kid.
Aunt. But
I'm not saying he's a good human being. Didn't seem like he was a good human being. I never met him. I know you met him.
Whatever. Yeah, I got you.
But that's
material. I'm just talking baseball.
Like, think about
right
what
now.
We're talking about. Yeah. The point in baseball is to get hits.
Yeah, hold on. Yeah. But the point in baseball is to be multifaceted and beat you in as many ways as possible. And my contention is Pete Rose was a one-trick pony. And everybody else that I mentioned was not.
He was the greatest at it. He had the most hits in the history of the sport.
I understand that.
That's it.
But he wasn't but again, the greatest at it is misleading because there's 100 guys with a better batting average.
Okay.
So in terms of like percentage success, he wasn't nearly as good as many others.
Fair enough.
That's what I'm saying.
He also led the league multiple times with the batting average. We talked about with the hits. I mean, it's not like he didn't win. He did win an MVP. Ichiro won one MVP as well.
He also came up when he was 27 years old.
Okay, well, whose fault is
that? And he has the
that?
Same amount.
That's my fault?
It's not anybody's fault. Yeah, that's okay. Just what happened.
Well, okay, so we're going based off of what happened. Exactly.
We're going to ask you again, maybe this time you'll answer. You're starting a team. Who do you want? Ichiro or Pete Rose?
How many wins
did
Ichiro
want?
Have?
Just answer it. Who do you want?
How many World Series did Ichiro
have? But who do you want? Ichiro or
give
Pete,
me Pete
Rose?
Rose. Give me Pete Rose.
Well, of course you're going to say that. Do you mean it?
I do. Yeah, Pete Rose.
I
like winning.
It took you 10 minutes to answer it. Do you really mean it?
I want Pete Rose. I don't think there's a wrong answer.
Well, there's not a wrong answer. Yeah. There's not a wrong answer.
You want Ricky
or you want Pete Rose? You start a team tomorrow. Ricky or Pete Rose?
I want Pete Rose.
Do you really?
Yeah.
I'll take Ricky. I'll have the better team.
How do you know?
I'll take Ichiro. I'll have the better team.
Well, why? Ichiro was on a team and they didn't win squat.
Understood. Did he have Joe Morgan?
So do you like winning?
Did he have bench?
Well, I mean...
Hey, he didn't.
Yeah, I mean, Ichiro had some
good... He also had to go against the best team of the history of baseball, the 98 Yankees.
Right.
That's the why the word context has come into the equation today, Sal. Right.
So it's not about then winning.
It's about everything.
What's more important, winning a World Series MVP or an All-Star MVP?
I don't know.
Ichiro's got an All-Star
so
MVP.
So Scott Brosius is better than Ernie Banks? What does this mean? Ray Knight's better than Daryl Strawberry?
Ichiro watched the World
Series. What's happening
here? I didn't say that. You're saying Ichiro's better than Pete Rose. I'm saying Pete Rose won the World Series 3 times.
We're attaching value to different things.
Right.
That's what we're doing.
Right. I'm attaching value to winning and hitting.
No.
You're saying that's an oversimplification
to get your point across, but that's okay.
Right.
I don't need to keep going with this. I'm very secure in my position on Pete Rose. Overrated.
Well, Jamie is in Long Beach. What's up, Jamie?
Hey, Jamie.
Hey, guys. Love you guys. I agree with 99%, so forgive me for focusing on the 1% I'm going to do. BT, you know, for you a lot of times it's this or that, and I see this and that. I saw Pete Rose play since 1966. I'm going to be 66 years old.
Okay.
And me personally, I definitely would take Pete Rose over Ichiro, maybe over Jeter, definitely not over Ricky Henderson. But one thing you're not bringing up, you said he's a one-trick pony. Mm. The guy played in 5 different positions in All-Star games. The guy was a better than average fielder. Was he a great fielder? No. But he was a very good fielder.
Okay.
Pete Rose was great. I am not a fan of Pete Rose, but I'm a fan of baseball. And let me tell you what I saw. I saw a documentary on YouTube that Pete Rose had 6 different positions in the batter's box where he made adjustments. The batters today, they don't make adjustments to the pitchers. They just sit there, dig in, and they're going to hit that home run.
Yeah, but that's why I'm not referencing many players today. That's why I reference other players like DiMaggio and Tris Speaker and those names. I mean, you know, listen, we could do this all day. I don't even want to do this all day.
Even if you were number 50, like where you said you'd have him in the top 50?
He's in the top 50.
Okay. He's still in the top 50 of all time in the sport.
I understand.
So even if you were to take 49 players ahead of him, like that's where I get I don't understand the overrated thing. Like you could say, well, you know, I would rather have X player over him or whatever. I mean,
I'm just not a prisoner to numbers. I think that there's an association.
You love the numbers.
No, I do, but I know when I've got to divorce myself from some numbers. And I think there's just an association. It's always bothered me. I hate that it's the day after he died, but I've had this conversation before.
Right.
You know, because he accrued more hits than anybody does not mean that he's the greatest hitter of all time. I think that's the laziest analysis in the history of baseball.
Right, but
it's just not true.
But it's not just that.
But it's all he did.
No, he won.
Oh, my
he also,
God, he
well,
won.
Well, he did.
Yogi Berra won more. Yogi Berra?
Okay, great.
Jeter, better?
But again, you're using different arguments.
Well, but I'm incorporating other facets.
You said, quote, that's all he did. A, even if it was all he did it better than anybody else to the tune of he's got the most hits in the history of the sport. B, it is not all that he did because he did a lot of other things that equated to winning. Ask some of those guys what you can do with Joe Morgan.
I know.
As Johnny mentioned, he didn't like
it. If you take the most shots, right, and you make the most shots, are you the best shooter of all time? Yes or no?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of people would say that.
Well, I think a lot of people would be wrong.
Yeah. Just look at his career.
Think about this. If you take the most, think about it. Just simplify it. You take the most shots and you make the most shots. Are you the best pure shooter? It's a simple question. The answer is no.
Yeah. I mean, he hit 300. He had the most hits in the history of the sport.
I know. I know he hit 303.
Not like he was a compiler. All right. We got Brian Baldinger coming up on the other side. So we'll do some football. We'll get back to your Mets calls. Don't worry. And Pete Rose stuff if you want when we get back. But we got Brian Baldinger coming up. So we'll do some football, break down the Jets loss and what to expect moving forward in week 5 in the NFL. BT and Sal on the Fan. So right now, we're joined by Odyssey NFL insider Brian Baldinger, host of the Best Football Show podcast, Insider Calls, brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. Mayo game day, be delicious. Baldy, it is postseason with Major League Baseball. Are you caught up in the fever or are you just still locked in on filming, on watching all that film?
Oh, I love baseball. I love October baseball. Are you kidding me? What the Mets did yesterday, the Yankees getting ready. Like, I'm going to be tuned in, but, you know, in between breaking down every game here this week here, so but I'm dialed in. What Lindor did yesterday was simply amazing. Great player, so I'm happy for the Mets right now.
Yeah, well, it sounds like you're a Mets fan. You're a Long Island kid. Were you a Mets fan growing up?
Yeah, you know, you got to make that choice early in life.
Yeah,
you know, like Mets or Yankees. You know, Shea Stadium was. It felt like it was in my backyard. I mean, I was 86 Mets. I had my rally cap on now.
Nice.
You know, like I was all about it.
All right, man. Well, listen, let's jump into the football stuff. And, you know, this seems to be an early pivot point here for Aaron Rodgers and this Jets offense. First of all, what do you make of the whole cadence issue with Rodgers and Robert Saleh?
Well, all of them, all of those false starts were on third downs. Okay? So, you know, you're down on the 1 yard line. You're fourth. You know, it's fourth and one. You're going for it. And your left guard jumps. You know, Breece Hall, like, why is the running back? Why is the running back jumping on a hard count? Like, okay, every once in a while, Tyron Smith, all right, your left tackle, you know, you might flinch. But your running back can't do it, and you certainly can't do it on the one when it's your only chance to really score a touchdown all day. Like, I don't know. Like, something's not, like, you know, the quarterback always reminds him, hard count here. And we used to say, like, you know, you got to hold your water, right? That was the football phrase. Hold your water, hold your water. Like, how in the world are you jumping down there? You're trying to get them to jump. Five times, it's just flawed. It's just a flawed process right now.
Well, didn't you think it was pretty telling? Because in the postgame press conference, you know, he was asked about maybe dialing down the cadence. He said, well, you can also hold guys accountable. I mean, that's a pretty direct shot at the coach.
It is. It totally is. A lot of things have to be looked at the coach here. Like, and that for sure is one of them. Like, you work on this stuff. You talk about it. You practice it. You have to get it enforced from the top down. This is a part of our offense. We're going to get these guys to jump. We're going to get 39. It's going to be 3rd and 4. We're going to get them to jump. It's Aaron Rodgers. That's what he does. Like, I don't know. I think it's a direct shot because the last thing Aaron Rodgers wants to do is take away from some of his strengths. He's already struggling enough in the passing game with guys not being where they're supposed to be. Like, at least in a game where, you know, a field goal decides it, you know, those 5 yard penalties, and there was 5 of them, false starts, 5. I don't know if I've seen anything like that this year. Like, I think that's a direct shot to the coach.
Can this team, Boldy, win in spite of their head coach?
Well, everything starts there, you know. I don't know if they have enough leadership, you know, enough talent to do it. Your coach has to put you in positions, has to make some strong decisions. He's not calling plays. Jeff Ulbrich is, you know, like Nathaniel Hackett is. Like, he's got to be, I don't know, like sometimes I just want to see a coach, when a guy jumps off sides on the 1 yard line, I wouldn't mind seeing Rex Ryan jump in a guy's face. Like, this can never, like, I just think you have to, like, get in guys' faces. You have to let them know on the sideline, whether it's a Bill Parcells glare, a Rex Ryan, like, bump in the chest. Like, you can't let this stuff just slide right now.
Yeah. Well, Boldy, here's the biggest issue. It's on Brian Boldinger, Odyssey NFL Insider, BT and Sound on the Fan. The biggest issue is that if Saleh starts to do that, it's not really authentic to who he's been so far. Once you establish who you are, how do you change who you are?
Well, that's a fair point, and I don't disagree with that. You know, he doesn't look like he's, you know, real hands-on. Maybe things get said, you know, in the locker room and in practice and things like that, but game day is when it's all about, I know you got to control some emotions and things like that, but to lose that game like that on Sunday, like, you can't just sit and watch that, to me. Like, there has to be some level of reaction from your coach that things have to get fixed in real time. And they're not. And it's disturbing to any Jet fan. Like, forget about what I say or what you say. I mean, Jet fans are looking at the same thing, going, why is this stuff still going on here, you know, in week 4 of this league right now?
And then, how's it going to get fixed? Insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. You can purchase Hellman's at your local Walmart, Kroger, or grocery store to add extra deliciousness and creamy flavor to your game day dishes this football season. I mean, I know we're only 4 weeks in, Baldy, but the Jets' schedule does not get any easier moving forward here. Is this team maybe not what many expected them to be? What are you looking at this team's ceiling right now?
Well, I mean, we just turned the page to October. I mean, September's the new August. If they get the issues in the passing game fixed, that would help. But they're not, you know, to see Breece Hall struggle like he's struggling, that's not supposed to happen. He's not. I mean, you brought in 3 new offensive linemen. You drafted one in the first round. I know Denver's got a good defense, but no running back should go 10 carries and gain 4 yards. And he doesn't look like he has any idea where the hole is, if there is a hole. Like, he's tripping on his feet behind the line of scrimmage. He looks terrible. This is supposed to be the strength of your team. Braylon Allen looks like a better answer. So, to answer your question, there's time. This time they play a very, very sound Minnesota team that's very well coached on both sides of the ball. I'm sure Sam Darnold's fired up about all this, you know. But, you know, he'll block all that out. But just you can go to London this week, and if they leave Thursday night, they get there Friday morning, if somehow they get C.J. Mosley back and they run the ball against this Minnesota team, which is very good defensively, and they win a game, you know, it's a week-to-week league. You can get right back to where you think you should be with a win against a very sound football team right now.
Yeah, I did want to ask you one thing about Sam before we get to the Giants in Seattle as well. It's over to Baldy here, BT and Sal. So have you seen Sam Darnold just clean a bunch of stuff up, or is he thriving because of the concepts? Why is he playing so well?
It's excellent coaching by Kevin O'Connell. I think he got a taste of it in San Francisco last year, watching Brock Purdy play and watching Kyle Shanahan, that organization, game plan week to week to week, and the talent they had. He comes to Minnesota with Kevin O'Connell, comes from the same system. He's got elite. He's got a very good offensive line, an elite running back, the best receiver in football, and they game plan like crazy. And the defense has been outstanding. So, I mean, Sam is sort of a product of everything around him, but I don't want to take anything away from Sam. He's making one good throw, one good read, one good decision after another, and he's played four excellent games in a row right now.
BT and Sal on the Fan. We're talking about Brian Baldinger, as we do every Tuesday at 12:40. Giants lost a tough one Thursday night against the Cowboys. You want to rehash that before we move ahead here, Baldy, to the Seahawks game with the Giants. What'd you think of the Giants? They coming up short kicking field goals all night long Thursday against Dallas.
Well, look, I mean, they took four deep shots in the game. They came up 0-for-4. We know which ones they were. Even the opening series of the game, Malik Nabers has double-moved a corner, Andrew Booth. Look, he's a practice squad player. Like, it's a home run. The safety is on the other side of the field, and Daniel, he underthrows him. He's got to stop to turn around and catch it. It's 31-yard gain. You'll take it, but that should be a touchdown. We saw Jameson Williams go 70 last night. You hit a guy like that in stride, he's going to score. You know, and then you get Slayton, down the field off, the defense is offside. It's a free play, and you underthrow the ball. One of those four deep shots, if you connect on any of the four, the Giants probably win that game. Now, he completed a lot of, high percentage of throws. He got the ball out of his hands. The offensive line pass protected very well against Micah Parsons. That wasn't an issue, and it has been in the past. But you got to hit those deep shots in this business right now. Those are chances to make it a different game. And I thought that's on DJ right there. He's got to hit one of those four that he missed.
Yeah. It's really hard to get a sense of who the Giants are, because I think all their opponents are a little off from what we thought they would be. Minnesota's better than we thought that they would be. So are the Commanders. Browns are worse. Dallas a little worse. Four games on film, can the Giants string something together and, rip off some wins and hang around? Or is this just kind of another season going nowhere? Early read, but what's your early read on that?
Well, I think this is going to be a big test in Seattle. They're coming off a short week where they didn't play well defensively at all. Jared Goff went 18 for 18 in that game. They couldn't stop them. They gave up 6 touchdowns. And that they hadn't seen anything like that. Now, they're not a complete team by any stretch, but they can flat out score. You're going to have your hands full defensively against Geno Smith and those two backs and the receivers. So that's going to be a challenge for the secondary, because DK can beat anybody in this league. And Jackson Smith and Jigba and Tyler Lockett, they're good. But defensively, they've got some question marks now. I mean, you got to run the ball against them. You got to shorten the game. You can't turn the ball over against them. You got to handle the atmosphere. A lot of the stadium in the league.
Let's try to fix that here, guys. A little issue with the connection there.
Yeah, you can let Baldy if we were almost done anyway. It's a bad line there. I don't know what the heck was going on with that. Maybe Hoff trying to clean that up. The only other thing I was going to ask him is what, and I'd be curious to get his take, if he is on the line, if not, we'll just get him next week, what he thinks is the number one thing that is holding the Giants back from being a team that can legitimately compete with, let's say, Seattle, this week? Is it the play of the quarterback, or is it the lack of talent on the roster? We've discussed that many different times, but with Boldy obviously being the expert that he is, you know, we'll get an answer for that as we go on here. But either way, it's going to be, how many must-win games can we have for the Giants? They need to respond. They got to, if they want to have any kind of season, BT, you got to be able to win this game against Seattle. I just don't think they have the firepower to do it.
It's a tough ask, you know, but his point, and I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I always get the impression if you were to ask him the question that you just posed to me, I think it's probably, you know, if Jones can connect on a couple of downfield throws, it changes everything
for him. But that's kind of the point. It is on the quarterback. Yep. All right, BT and Sal on the Fan. That was Odyssey NFL Insider. Brian Baldinger, host of the Best Football Show podcast, Insider Calls, brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. Mayo game day, be delicious. We'll take a quick break, come back, more of your calls on the Mets and the celebration yesterday, and of course, looking ahead tonight, playoffs, wild card series, game one in Milwaukee.
When it comes to making plans, you are the best. What about those round trips, which are perfect on your way there and perfect on your way back? Or those meetings with friends, surprise parties, camps, birthdays. The same way you plan for the important moments, start planning to protect you and your loved ones from a natural disaster. Sign up for local weather and emergency alerts. Prepare an emergency kit and make a family communications plan. Get started at ready.gov/plan.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.